Hi, this is Peter Bart.
And this is Mike Fleming.
And this is the Bart Fleming Podcast. So, Mike, Oscar season is started full blast, and you can tell because every screening room in town is booked morning, noon, and night, not just for to show the movies, but also for the inevitable question and answer sessions, which are now a firmly entrenched ritual. It always amused me because people around today think this was always the case, but it's a new phenomenon. I remember Billy Wilder years ago saying to me, you know, there's no damn way I'm going to go out there and give speeches on behalf of my pictures, because if I have to explain my jokes, they're not funny. He had a point, I guess, but some of the directors around today, like Adam McKay and Damien Chazelle and Peter Farrelly, are just great at these Q&A sessions. They handled some beautifully. I remember last year, Darren Aronofsky laboring through his biblical metaphors and allegories to explain his movie called Mother. And he made the movie seem even more pretentious than it was when I saw it without his narration.
But Peter, one thing, if I can just tuck in an observation to kind of break up your soliloquy. I mean, we just did our Los Angeles Contenders event, which is really the first big, get together of all these filmmakers and casts of the Oscar movies in Hollywood. And this came after we did one in London. And I have to say, I really find this to be just a very instructive and fun and entertaining and enlightening event. And I think when you mentioned Billy Wilder, they don't want Billy Wilder to explain his jokes, but what they would like is to just have him kind of revel in the artistry, that he went through to turn out these memorable films. And I've gotten to see firsthand. I moderated a bunch of these panels, and the stuff that you learn from the cast of movies like Black Panther or 22 July or First Man, or the Mr. Rogers documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor? These things are so touching and instructive. I have to say, I love this season because it is, at least for right now, it's almost like opening day in baseball. Anyone can win the World Series, even though almost everyone will not win the World Series. It's brimming with possibility and optimism, and it's all about the artistry and the love of the game. And it's not necessarily about all the cynicism and all the scandals. And so I really love this time of year.
But it's risky out there. I mean, this is a time of Me Too and of diversity, of the N-word controversies. I mean, everyone has to be extraordinarily careful about what they say. I mean, you and I both like this movie Green Book, but it was Viggo Mortensen, who's the most scrupulously liberal guy that we know in the acting fraternity, who was accused of using the N-word. And of course, in talking about the Green Book, all he was doing, as I understand it, was explaining that while the N-word was used in 1961, was commonly used in 61, when his movie was set, that today it is not to be used anymore.
Well, I think it was a regrettable thing, but the truth is, if he had simply referred to it as the N-word, he would have been okay. I had actually sat with Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali and Peter Farrelly the day after that, and Viggo muscled through, even though he was just really, really down with a bad cold. And I'm not excusing the use of that word. I never use that word. I find it to be just a terrible word, and especially a terrible word for a white person to use. But it was just I could tell in his heart, in this long interview that we did, I could tell where he's at. And the truth is, I don't know that this movie gets made without Viggo Mortensen. He felt very passionate about the unifying message and shining a light on racism. And I think his heart was in the right place. I think he just made a misstep. We didn't make a big fuss over it because I don't know. You know, I hate these things. I just don't think it didn't seem to me that this film, which has emerged as as the sleeper in the Oscar race, ought to get dinged for this small indiscretion. He apologized. Mahershala accepted it. Those guys seemed to get along really well during the making of the movie and during our interview. And I say onward.
Well, I agree. See, I find these Q&A sessions more frustrating than enlightening. One reason being that the interesting questions are rarely asked. I mean, for example, Damien Chazelle, in First Man, to me, he set out to make a really important picture, and he shot it beautifully. It was predicated on the fact that his protagonist had disguised his personality completely. There was almost no one there. He was building a picture around a man whose attitudes, his feelings, emotions were totally repressed. So it'd be fun to get him talking about that. What conversations took place between him and his leading man, Brian Gosling, about playing a non-person? Questions like that, I find, don't emerge from these conversations.
But let me interrupt you for a second. I don't see how you can call Neil Armstrong, who I consider to be one of the great, great Americans, to be a non-person. I mean, what Damien did, I respect. He basically crafted a movie that reflected the insular, solitary nature of a man who was completely damaged by the loss of his daughter at a young age. And the way that he wove that into the storyline, it just connected me in kind of a profound way. And I think that it was very interesting to watch a movie about test pilots where it was not like the Top Gun guys or the Right Stuff guys with that sort of gum cracking, kind of cocky, I can basically pull out of any situation, and Chuck Yeager and all that macho stuff. And I love that in those movies. But I have to say, I really respected how Damien and Ryan showed incredible restraint. And I thought the portrayal of both Neil Armstrong and his wife and their children and their family and the other astronauts, some of whom don't make it to the end, I thought it was just fairly, I thought it was important, and I thought it was true to the subject matter, and it made me respect Damien Chazelle all the more. So I have to say, I disagree with you.
Well, I'm glad. It's good when we disagree. My frustration again about the Q&As is that the most interesting arguments, controversies about pictures always take place behind the scenes. There are arguments about the script, arguments about casting. There are always like 15 or 20 people that every director considers for every role. And there are tremendous fights between the studio or the Netflix and the filmmaker about the choice. I mean, you and I both like Viggo. You mentioned it before. But just think of all of the suggestions of brilliant Italian actors whose names were put forward before Peter Farrelly happened to hit on this Danish-American actor. I would love to have been privy to some of those fights about casting. On this and almost every picture, God knows I've been in the middle of casting fights, usually lose them.
Well, Viggo, he discussed that, in great detail. And, when I spoke to him, and it was one of the things that made him reluctant to do this. But ultimately, Peter Farrelly gave him enough reasons to not say no. And I think when he had the opportunity to work with Mahershala, who he had gotten to know pretty well when Viggo was on the award circuit for Captain Fantastic and Mahershala was on the award circuit and won for Moonlight, And I just think that there were a host of reasons why these guys wanted to work together. And he played Eastern European in Eastern Promises, and I thought he did a fantastic job in that movie. And I got to say, I also don't ascribe to this idea that only somebody who has Italian in their blood can play an Italian person. I think these people are actors, and they,
I was the guy who favored Brando, so don't hit me on that.
Well, yeah, but I think that now, you know, this is all, it's interconnected with what you started with how sometimes people say the wrong thing when they're in a public situation. And that particular thing was not even, that wasn't televised. So it wasn't like I found, for instance, when Bill Maher used that word on HBO, he did it in a way that I found to just be really smug and arrogant and tone deaf. Like it was his word, and it wasn't his word. And I think he apologized, and rightly so. This other thing, this was just something else. I think I really do believe that Vigo's heart is in the right place, and I don't think that he has to apologize for not being of Italian descent to play this role, which I think is going to put him right there as a front runner in the conversation with Bradley Cooper and Mahershala and some others who may contend for these trophies.
So before we leave the subject of Oscar season, one thing I find that makes the other studios and the independents groan is that Disney, which is rarely present during Oscar season, Disney, because of Black Panther, is suddenly a force this year. And the town indeed is becoming a little paranoid about the fact that now that Disney and Fox are actually putting together their merger, that a huge new company is being formed before our very eyes. And even as we talk, the whole management structures of Disney and Fox are being reconstructed. And this yet another giant company is appearing before our eyes that's going to change the face of Hollywood. I mean, 5 of the 10 top pictures this year were released by Disney, and that's before the acquisition. $71 billion acquisition. So the face of Hollywood is going to change radically. And next Oscar season, we're going to see a lot of Disney/Fox take an important presence.
Well, you know what? I'm of two minds about this. I thought that Black Panther was a tremendous accomplishment. And, you know, when at our Contenders event, I interviewed the director Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan and Lupita Nyong'o, and basically and learned a lot about how much they were able to connect with their own personal journey and blind spots in their history by going to Africa and making a movie that was African centric. And so if Disney, but I also know that there's a segment of the voting population that hasn't seen this film. And it's not because they're prejudiced against the race of the people in the film, but they are prejudiced against superhero movies. They tend to marginalize and dismiss them. So if Disney can use its might to at least get those people to give this film a chance, that'll be a great thing. But when I look at what's happening in this collision between Fox and Disney, I guess my most immediate thoughts are on the rivers of blood that are going to basically be, we're going to see in Hollywood because of the duplicative layoffs. I mean, they basically have said that they're going to save $2 billion or so. And I'm not sure how easy it is for those people to get new positions. I guess I'm a little surprised that some of the local politicians haven't been a little bit noisier about what shape this is going to take, how many people are going to be laid off, what that's going to look like. But I, from the estimates that I hear, is that it could be 5,000 people. That is really something. And I understand that in the larger picture, they are reshaping the way that movies are made and consumed. And this is going to be about streaming services, and everything is in the process of changing. But I guess I'm looking at the painful part of the change, at least for right now.
Well, and the painful part is exacerbated by the fact that, as you well know, half of Los Angeles is burning down at the moment. So you feel like there are many out there who are losing their jobs as well as losing their homes. That's not a great time of year.
No, and by the way, you know what? I guess I have to apologize right now for using an image, to describe people who are being laid off, and I guess that was a little bit callous of me to explain it the way that I did when there are so many people who have actually lost their lives in these fires, and so I apologize.
Good talking to you, Mike. Thank you.
Thank you.